Hey, if you're listening to that music, you know it's a fifth Friday and a special event because this is none other than Spiritual Perspectives. This is our radio program of Spiritual Perspectives, taking a look at real life from a, well, spiritual perspective. This is Scout Bartlett, and I'll be your host this morning with Spiritual Perspectives, and I want to introduce you to our guest and express our appreciation. We definitely hugely appreciate the First Church of Christ Science Mill Valley, who brought our guest to us this morning, and want to point out that you can find out even more information on spirituality.com. Is that a great URL? Spirituality.com. Anyway, our guest actually bumped into these concepts of healing when he was a teenager. And like any good teenager, when he discovered something that worked, he wanted to go hammer it into everybody's head everywhere around and make sure that everybody knew that this worked. Yeah. He soon realized, however, that it's not the words that teach and change the world. It's selfless loving and healing that attract people to basic realities and real truth. After having been out playing in the world as everything from setting up organizations to support and protect individuals and workers, all the way across to studying internationally, both in the United States and in France, having worked in civil rights, and then all the way through to having taught in universities, many of you can recognize this one. At a point in time, he discovered and recognized that he was going to move into a full-time practice instead, as a full-time practice in teaching and practicing a spiritual healing practice. As he says, in retrospect, it just seems natural that I would end up in this full-time practice of this healing science, working at a more fundamental level than even when I was a civil rights activist to be solving problems. At the time I made the decision, I'll admit, it seemed like a risk. Now, I couldn't imagine it any other way. Moving into this full-time practice was like coming home at last. Everybody, I'd like to introduce you to our guest this morning. This is John Tyler. John, this is everybody. Welcome.
To meet you, everybody, and especially to be in touch with you, Scott.
Fabulous. Great to have you here, John. So glad to be talking with you. So, yeah, what an interesting place to go from teaching in university, and you were teaching in Princeton and Pittsburgh, a nice, interesting combination, but to go from teaching in university to deciding that what you were really going to follow was your full-time, as your full-time gig, was both teaching and practicing in a spiritual healing practice, and in this case, Christian Science-based spiritual healing practice. Talk about jumping off into that leap of faith.
Well, actually, it was just that. It was interesting. There was a period of time in which the aspect of political science, that's what I was teaching, was being questioned. There were two groups. There was a group who felt that science, really was a science. And then there was another group who felt, well, no, it's really philosophical. The question, you know, what is a good society? And we should be studying Locke and Hobbes and Plato and so forth. And so at faculty meetings, the anti-science people, knowing that I was an advisor to a group of students known as the Christian Science Organization, kind of focused on, it was good-natured riveting, but it was really, question how in the, political science isn't really science. Certainly can't have a religion that's scientific.
And that's one of the interesting...
There was a lot of attention focused.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting parts, is a lot of what Christian Science is based on is the book Science and Health with Keys to the Scripture by Mary Baker Eddy. And I like to point out that, first of all, she wrote it when, pardon me, but women weren't doing such things as writing books or starting newspapers. But more to the point, she wrote it back when the word science had a very definitive meaning. And I remember from my engineering degree, back when I thought science really meant the exploration of a concept or a theory to see if one could create a repeatable result. So I noticed that you're referring to it as a science as if your whole experience with this has been that you've been able to see, we'll say, replicable or repeatable results.
Absolutely. And this was that interesting aspect. People, at least on the political science faculty, part of the administration of the department, were curious, and they came to my office, talked to me about it, and I began to realize I was spending more time in my office talking about Christian science than political science. And they knew that this was something, a religion which healed, which took seriously Jesus' command to his disciples and through them to us to heal, to cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, heal the sick, to go out and actually, there was this serious assumption, well, people who understood his teachings were going to do this naturally. And so they came and they were saying, okay, you're saying this really heals. I've got this problem. Can you heal me?
Mm-hmm.
And I was first taken back, I'd worked with this for myself, but hadn't been expecting to be healing others, even though I'd often read those commands of Jesus. But yes, I had to answer yes, because I knew it worked. I knew it worked for myself. And so I found myself working with other, especially administrators in the department, who had problems, not always physical ones, sometimes marital ones, other kinds of problems. And we prayed together, and they found healing.
Now, when you're talking healing, John, I know that you're not just talking as in, well, we said some prayers and they felt better, or we said some prayers and they calmed down, or they were nervous or they were stressed and we did some prayer work and their stress got less. Describe what you mean by that word healing.
Well, healing is you can look at it from two different standpoints. There's healing from the standpoint of here we are within a physical world in which there's the preconceptions, the laws of the matter which are governing it. We have a problem. Maybe it's a physical problem. Maybe it's another kind of problem. What we need to do is to see, to really change our perspective, to see this from a different point of view. And this is really what it is, obeying that command that Jesus gives at the very beginning of his healing ministry, where he says, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." Repent, in modern translations, is usually translated something like, see from a different perspective.
Ah, repent, not as, I've always thought of that as having a more negative connotation, but see from a different perspective.
Yeah, it's a translation of the Greek, metanoeo, and there are two parts there. The meta is again, anew, and the noeo is knowing or seeing. So, and what he's saying is, we start from this radically different perspective. We look out, not with our physical eyes or ears, we perceive with our spiritual sense. And what is it that we're able to perceive? The kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's here.
Mm-hmm.
We're in it. It's a part of us. We're a part of it. He says elsewhere, kingdom of God is within you, but this totally different perspective enables us to understand different reality, and in particular, a reality in which most religions, not just Christian, others as well, see the equivalent of the kingdom of heaven, that kind of paradise or the wonderful place that we're eventually going to get to, somewhere off, distant in the future, mm-hmm. not at the next mountain ridge, but there are a few mountain ridges more, and there's the heavenly city, way, way, way away. And this was a time this is the belief in Jesus' time, just as it is today, Jesus came to say essentially the opposite, saying, hey guys, this is not off distant in the future. We're here already. It's just that you're not at a looking at things from the right perspective. You've been trained to see the material world as though that's your only world. That's the limits within which you have to exist. But you can, through this radically different mental approach, you can not only see things different, but through that conscious understanding, change all kinds of things in your life, physically, humanly, in terms of finances, of human relationships, of all the kinds of problems that we imagine ourselves to be subject to.
Mm-hmm. So you're actually, John, I know you do one talk where one of the key elements is to explore how we can get involved in healing conflicts in our own lives, but also for the world. And this is all from this change of thought to, I love this quote, says that your talks are designed to show how natural it is to change our vision of ourself so that we all can become spiritual healers. But you're talking not just healing yourself, but from that change of view, that repent, that see anew, that you're talking changing it for the world. So how do we expand this vision out? Because this is still an expanded vision of healing from within a change of vision, right?
Exactly. Yes. And there was a lecture given in Novato a few weeks ago, I think now. And it's now on marinchristianscience.com.
Great, thank you.
And what I went to is recording on ChristianScience.com is examples of just what you're referring to, Scott. The ability, this is a kind of wonderful thing, because we have, even as separate individuals, even as people who are not part of, you know, powerful organizations and so forth, but just an individual who is conscious of these kinds of problems in the world, able to change our thinking, and in particular, what I was referring to earlier, that whole question of the mental perspective. What are we accepting as our reality, as the reality of the world? For Jesus, and if you look at his Sermon on the Mount, he focuses on a reinterpretation. It's kind of, he doesn't want to change the Mosaic Law, but he does want us to re-examine what essentially it's getting at. And he takes the several of the commandments as an example, indicating that, yes, behavior is important, but even more important is our mental approach. How do we understand these commands? He takes the seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, and he illustrates that, okay, there's the act, we have to pay attention to that, of course. But even more important, in fact, much more important, is what's going on in consciousness. And if we're able to correct it at that point, remember he says, if you've lusted after a woman, you've already committed adultery with her. Mm-hmm. So if we can arrest and really just totally reverse that pattern of thought in consciousness, then we have corrected the problem. And of course, correcting it in our thought is correcting it in our behavior, because the behavior follows the thought.
So correcting it in my thought is correcting it in my behavior, because behavior follows thought. And yet, I'm looking at some of the notes about things you presented and concepts you've worked with, and I'm getting a sense that you've seen things be corrected even deeper than simply thought or behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. And here it's there's a recognition, and this goes back again, Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of Christian Science. in explaining the... She has this textbook that I know you're familiar with, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures. And in it, she interprets the nature of Jesus' teachings, because that subtitle, Key to the Scriptures, really is a description of the whole book. It's in a, it's a companion to understanding the Bible, and it right. enables us to get really to the depth of what Jesus is talking about. Mm-hmm. And Jesus recognizes the tremendous power, and this again comes through in the Sermon on the Mount, the tremendous power of loving, of divine love itself, and especially how we learn to love, how we learn to recognize that this is a mental activity that, that we have, we exercise for ourselves, but at least as important is the way in which we use it in understanding and appreciating God. That's he kind of sums up the Ten Commandments into two: loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, spirit, and loving our neighbor as ourself. And in the Sermon on the Mount, he takes it even beyond that, saying that that the this whole process of loving is usually seen as individual by individuals as something kind of simple, where we, you know, we love those who love us. And he says,
yeah.
Almost, I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but he says, oh, that doesn't count. That's the easy stuff.
Yes.
Where the real challenge comes is in loving your enemy. Now, how do you do that? How do you get to the point where you can genuinely love your enemy? And it's kind of interesting that when you look at that, it's impossible. Because as long as you're defining an individual as your enemy, you're defining your position vis-a-vis that individual as one in which love can't be the natural relationship.
Right.
So what we need to do is, and this is this gets at the heart of my sense of prayer, and especially in this new kind of framework that Mary Baker Eddy enables us to understand of what Jesus is teaching, we get to a point where we recognize, and there's a. It's interesting because I had a need to do this, and again, it's this I describe in detail in that lecture that you can see on marinchristianscience.com.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a need to love my enemies, and I discovered an essay that Mary Baker Eddy wrote called "Love Your Enemies," in which she begins by asking essentially questions which lead to the conclusion, you know, we create our own enemies. We see individuals, we identify them with acts, and what we're engaged in this process, and the media is no help, because they often almost do this for us. They
yeah.
create
enemy creation for sale.
We're a part of that. They create these pictures that we then hold as the real identity of an individual, and full of all kinds of negative characteristics, and as the origin of terrible things that are happening in the world. And now we have an enemy. We've
right.
developed a picture of that individual, and now we can hate it. We can, you know, react to it. It comes into our thought, and we participate in all those things. We even sometimes want to get revenge against it, and it calls forth just the worst possible emotions and thoughts that one could engage in.
Mm-hmm.
And we see through Mary Baker Eddy's teachings that this whole picture that we've formed of an individual is one that we can mentally push aside. This is a part of the total correction process. We can mentally, and frankly push more than aside, we can push totally out of our consciousness to begin to identify the real identity of that person as a creation of God.
Uh-huh.
Now, this isn't excusing the horrible things that individual may have done, but it's enabling us with a different consciousness of the nature of that individual, what she describes as spiritual sense, we're able through that spiritual sense to identify the real person, the real godlike creation, which is the true identity of that individual, and then the process of loving one's enemy, in quotes, becomes something natural because we're loving really the godlike nature that which is inherent in each individual.
Sort of a grand expression of the namaste experience, but actually literally taking oneself consciously into that. I will focus into the core essence of myself and recognize the core essence of you, even in the midst of while I'm perhaps disagreeing with your motives or your strategies.
Yeah, I think to some degree, but it's taking it beyond the human sense of a core essence. It's recognizing that there's a pure godlike nature, which is the core essence of each individual, every single individual. And that with our spiritual sense, we can come to a point where we begin to appreciate that, to value it, and really to understand it as God expressed.
As God expressed. Yeah, perfect. Perfect. So, John, you talk about active love. Is this what you're referring to with that phrase, through prayer and active love, we can find real solutions?
Exactly. The active love is, it's active in a number of ways. It's active in being alert not to accept the world's definition of either ourselves or other individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, these stereotypes that especially the media loves to present, but that we're tempted to sort of accept just because it's an easy, preformatted way to identify individuals. It demands an awareness of about, I would say, two or three crucial elements. One is that there really is, despite what we learn about the material world, there really is only one source. And that source, God, is infinite good. And the nature of the creation of that source, that single creator, is good. Mm-hmm. This, again, despite all the stuff that we learn about the horrible nature of the world and that it's a mixture of good and evil, and we have lots of good, but then there's all the wars and plagues and, the horrible stuff. But I think what Jesus was his primary purpose was getting us to a point where we could begin to appreciate all of the rest of that stuff, the material world and its laws and catastrophes and so forth, were really, and what I'm going to say is pretty radical, and the challenge to understand just on the surface. Mm-hmm. But all of that is essentially the result of being educated to accept that world, and he refers to it as the world. You know, he says to his disciples, he wants them to go into the world, to operate within that context, but not to be of the world, not to be defined by the world, not to have their thinking so corrupted by the world that it accepts the world as though it were the reality. He's essentially saying, operate within this context, don't accept it as real, and by not accepting it as real, on the contrary, accepting this understanding of pure, infinitely good, loving God as the source of what is really real, that from that standpoint, you're able to go into the world and correct some of the problems of it.
So this is, to borrow a phrase, this is that experience of moving beyond the evidence of my senses and coming back into a deeper part of me that is my knowing.
Exactly. Exactly. It's and Scout, your identification of the senses here is absolutely crucial, because it's as though we have this need to make a distinction between what the physical senses are telling us and what Mary Baker Eddy describes as our spiritual sense, or what Jesus, remember when he talks about having eyes you see not, having ears you hear not. He was obviously not referring to the physical eyes or ears, but to the spiritual sensing. And it's that, that's the key. It's being able to use that spiritual sense in order to enable us to discover what is true, what is real. And that crucial question he asks, you know, or not the question, but the statement he makes, rather, about the nature of the truth. You shall know the truth about the spiritual reality, and that truth shall make you free. Free from these preconceptions that we're taught about the material world and its reality and its laws.
Mm-hmm. So, John, you describe your whole teaching practice as coming from a healing practice. And so I want to come back to that word again, to your full-time healing work. Have you witnessed personally, not just from somebody else's story or in a book, but have you witnessed personally the validation of these concepts through, let's say, a transformation of physical state from a state of being where a physician might say, well, this is the normal course of events that you can expect from this physical state, where you've seen a transformation of physical state back into a state of physical well-being different from, call it, the normal medical progression? And sorry for the weird wording of that. I'm just really trying to get to a place.
I appreciate it very much, Scott, because that's I think that's exactly the way to put it. It's because we're working with really different concepts of reality,
mm-hmm.
but it's they're having an effect. That is, our understanding is having an effect within the physical. So, no, you're absolutely right to be careful about that. And there's one that I it is significant to me and happened fairly early in my practice as a practitioner of Christian Science, which was is helpful because it has medical confirmation of the problem kind of before and after. And was a case of a young man, high school student, who lived not in the same town where I was. So he had he was a soccer player and he'd broken his ankle. And he gave me a call. He was not a Christian Scientist, but he'd heard that Christian Science heals. He was an avid soccer player, and the x-rays showed there was, you know, a clear break. And his coach had insisted that he would not be able to play for at least 6 weeks. And, of course, the doctors indicated he had to have a cast and crutches and all the paraphernalia.
Yeah, broken is broken. There's rules about it.
Absolutely. And the coach wasn't going to take any chances, even though he was so anxious to play. At any rate, when we, you know, he first called, we talked just a little bit about what he was getting into. And I indicated that, well, in Christian Science, we need to rely completely on spiritual understandings, kind of what we've just been talking about. And I talked just a little bit about how he could see himself, you know, how he could come to understand himself from a spiritual perspective.
Okay.
And we talked about the stuff he was made of, the substance that was the real, we'll call him Tom, the real Tom. And we began just with simple things like the fact that he was really an expression of divine love. He was kind. He could see that in his behavior. He was gentle. He had a generosity that he expressed. We looked at the elements of truth, and I selected these ideas because they're ways in which Mary Baker Eddy helps us to understand the nature of God, and I wanted him to have a sense, not just of his closeness to God, but the fact that he was really, he could see himself as being made up of the substance of God's nature, that he was created as the image and likeness of God. Okay, image and likeness of God is God expressed, God reflected, God, mm-hmm. you know, made manifest. And so we looked at elements of truth. That's another synonym that Mary Baker Eddy uses for God. We saw that his sense of fair play, of honesty, that we were looking at really the spiritual Tom, the, the real spiritual stuff he was made of.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this for a couple of days. By the third day, he said, you know, I can walk easily. There's no pain. There's nothing here. He was sure that the healing was complete. And the coach was not only not sure, he said, no way. You
right.
know, if you can show me the that it's been healed, okay. But you're not going to play on
right.
until I have, you know, sort of visual proof of
yeah.
that.
Yeah, till I've got insurance coverage.
Tom was so insistent that his mother took him to the doctor again, who took another X-ray, and the healing was complete. In fact,
wow.
The doctor was on the faculty of a medical school. He asked the mother if he could show the X-rays to his class because he said this is kind of healing he'd never seen before.
That's going to change your world when you actually get to see that the rules of the world are different. And I'll just take a brief second to remind our listeners, you are listening to Spiritual Perspectives. This is your host, Scout Bartlett. We're talking with our special guest this morning, John Tyler, and we're appreciating the First Church of Christian Science in Mill Valley, who invites you to check out spirituality.com as well as the services from any of the Christian Science churches. But John, that if this was your first huge experience on that level as a practitioner of a healing, a spiritual healing practice, in this case, Christian Science, that had to be a life changer for you, too, to get to have to wrap your head around the impossible made possible and the possible made real.
It was and has been. But, you know, it turns out that that these kinds of experiences are just so much more common than I think most people imagine.
Mm-hmm.
My first experience was even more significant. It didn't have the nice part about this is it had the kind of confirmation that most people require, namely physical sense evidence before and physical sense evidence after.
Yeah. Yeah, an interruption of that physical sense evidence in the middle, but physical sense evidence on both ends, and the willingness to let it stay fixed even after the brain says, whoa, wait, uh-uh.
Right. Exactly. Yes, because consciousness is so important here. That's where, in prayer, that's essentially where we work, and that's in part why we describe it as a science, because it's coming to not just an intellectual understanding, but a spiritual understanding of a totally different reality, so that it's a, you know, we're perceiving things from that different perspective that I described at the very beginning.
And it's interesting because Mary Baker Eddy codified or put all of these rules together into a deep study of, you know, repeatable results way back when she put together Science and Health with Keys of the Scriptures. But we're seeing now the secret has come out and numbers of other things, including a lot of quantum physics that's starting to say, you know what? Reality, we have physical science evidence all over the place that your reality is affected by your expectations.
It's fascinating. And there's a lot of work that's going on right now among philosophers of science. Which are questioning the assumption that the paradigm which accepts matter as the basis of all reality is the only one from which we can work,
mm-hmm.
and they're beginning to recognize that this science of Christianity is one as valid as, let's say, the essential paradigm of the physicist, the chemist, the biologist, where there's the starting point is matter is real and we have to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
This other standpoint is one where spirit is real, and that's the foundation of all reality, and we need to understand it. And we can understand it using the same scientific principles, that is the recognition that, just as you say, if you're going to, you know, scientists or the philosophers of the science are very careful here. They talk about the search for laws, but they recognize that, in a sense, you don't ever arrive at a full, total understanding of truth. What you arrive at is the ability not to be able to prove something false. In other words, you can't ever finally prove something true,
mm-hmm.
but you can fail to prove it false.
Mm-hmm.
And if you continue to fail to prove it false, then you have pretty good evidence that it's true. And frankly, Christian scientists don't usually put their hypotheses in that wording, but it's the same thing. They fail to prove it false. And when you have confirmed, in a sense, the logic of your application of these scientific laws over and over again, then you have something that you can accept as a law and
yes.
and rely on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the mental approach that Mary Baker Eddy takes and uses in this concept of science and scientific demonstration.
Cool. Great. So one question I want to enter in, John, I want to enter in the question of, you talk about active love and prayer. And prayer is one of those interesting words that in some structures and some places, people get very accustomed to the idea of prayer as now I lay me, or some sort of a boxed thing that they're very used to as a rote repetition. But I directly am thinking here that you experience prayer as something significantly other than just a rote repetition. How would you define your experience and your use of that word prayer, John?
Well, there's the first aspect, which is just a kind of superficial one, and that is there's what could be called the prayer of petition, which is asking God to do something, and I think that's perfectly legitimate. It's one that it recognizes that there's a response to our desire for finding a solution, but basically, I think we need to go much, much deeper. And the framework is very simply one in which there is an understandable, coherent set of laws that we can understand. And as we approach this, it's not just an intellectual understanding of these laws, it's using that spiritual sense that I referred to earlier, not a physical sense, an awareness, a consciousness of the nature of God. And I would say prayer depends just so fundamentally on our awareness, our consciousness of the beauty, the wholeness, the love. Mary Baker Eddy has seven different synonyms that she uses that enable us to conceive, to bring into consciousness an awareness of this wonderful source, and they are truth, spirit, life, love, principle, soul, and there's a seventh. It doesn't come to throughout right away, but all of these enable us to kind of expand our consciousness of the nature of God. Yes, spirit is perhaps the seventh. The source really of our being. And then prayer, the essence of prayer, bringing into consciousness these elements, is recognizing that there's a constant communication from this source, which we call God, and that our job really is, having brought our thought into line or in tune with the nature of God, is just to listen, recognizing that communication is going on 24/7, and our job is to appreciate the fact that communication is going on. Secondly, that we have spiritual sensitivity, all of us. We turn naturally. Mary Baker Eddy uses a wonderful metaphor to describe the naturalness with which we, and this is each individual, turns towards God. She talks about the flowers and frankly all plants turning naturally to the light. That's kind of our moral sense of recognizing good, turning towards God. And once we're turning towards God, just genuinely listening, recognizing that response is going to come not necessarily in a deep bass voice booming out some wonderful message, but somehow it's going to come to our thought as an answer to the prayer, and come not just in words so that we can understand it, but in transformation of ourselves, transformation of I would say my patients, for example, as a practitioner, but a change which comes about in the human physical experience of any individual who genuinely prays in this way.
I know, John, you make a statement that in your talks you bring about an awareness, or they're designed to show how natural it is to change our vision of ourselves so that we all can become based into being able to be healing from a spiritual perspective. So how natural it is to change our vision of ourselves so that we can all become spiritual healers, whether it's for ourselves or even supporting that healing in the whole world around us. And you talk about not only becoming a spiritual healer, but taking that into conflict resolution. And so there's two ideas there, that we can naturally change our vision of ourselves so that healing is a real possibility, and that makes a difference in terms of conflict resolution. Let me just toss that idea and let you run with it.
Okay. Well, the naturalness, in a sense, I think we've covered a little bit. There is, it's kind of interesting at the very beginning, when Mary Baker Eddy found that she had discovered a dimension of Jesus' teaching which wasn't commonly described as the genuine theology of Jesus, and this was this essential recognition of the, you know, that we could see through a what I would call a physical and human facade of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
We could identify the spiritual identity of someone and push aside mentally the, frankly, what's a kind of a distraction, that is the physical picture of that individual, as well as what we associate with the historical background. So now, having stripped away that fake picture, we're able to see the true identity of that individual. And that, of course, that is learning to love the individual. It's breaking out of the context in which we have enemies. And above all, it's that which enables, you know, I mentioned that metaphor of turning naturally to the light.
Mm-hmm.
It enables us to sense the good that is being expressed. The source is God, but it's being expressed by each part of God's creation. And what I started to say a little bit earlier was that Mary Baker Eddy, at the very beginning, wanted to call this science a moral science, because the naturalness of turning to good, everyone has it. We all, at least to some degree, some not too much, but most of us of fairly substantial quantity of moral sense, we know how to distinguish between good and evil. We're learning more and more how to do that better, but it is something which is an inherent part of each of us. It's what we could call our Christly nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, that's a natural part of everyone. So now, using that, we can begin to strip aside this facade, the fake picture of man, which, interestingly, is sometimes attractive, but which is always a distraction, because what we really want to get to is an understanding and a spiritual perception of the godlike nature of that individual. And
perfect.
in the lecture, and again, I'll just make reference to where you can see this on the internet. It's marinchristianscience.com. In the lecture, I described something which, to me, was the great miracle of the 20th century. And that was an experience I had where I was able to work with some of the South Africans. This was in the 80s. And it was a period of time when the South African government was an apartheid government. That is, it was trying to separate the blacks from the whites and frankly, almost enslave. I mean, it was persecuting the blacks, the great majority of the population, so much so that the rest of the world knew that the result of this apartheid policy was going to be the bloodiest revolution the world had ever known.
Yes.
And we, the group that I, of South Africans who were in the area where I was living around Pittsburgh, and who'd all had experience in South African jails, we were working to formulate a constitution which was going to follow the revolution and which would kind of pull together the various parts of the society, obviously establish a framework for human rights, and then even a judicial structure which could reconcile the at least begin the reconciliation of the ripped apart, torn apart parts of the society. But the thing I want to get at is the mental framework of these individuals. We prayed together. We worked together. I had taught constitutional law, and so the putting together the constitution was a fascinating thing. But the essence of our work really was a prayer. They were praying from their standpoint. I was praying from mine. But they had an ability to see through the ugly aspects of the then leaders. Of the apartheid movement, and to see to a point where they were capable of forgiving. They were, I love that mental approach. It coincided exactly what I felt I was doing in understanding the spiritual nature of these leaders who historically and in the media were being portrayed as just the most horrible political leaders one could imagine. And in this process, in 1984, there was just this. I'm giving this kind of as a characteristic of the mental attitude of these individuals.
Yeah.
Desmond Tutu, who is a black religious leader in South Africa, had received the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, and in his acceptance speech, he said that a life without forgiveness is a life without meaning, not worth living.
Perfect.
And that characterized this mental approach, which was able to see through the facade, the historical ugliness of these individuals, see through that to the spiritual identity of man, and certainly again these individuals. And it was in that context that the miracle took place.
Sweet.
February of 1990, F.W. de Klerk pardoned Nelson Mandela, who
yes.
had been up to that point 27 years in solitary confinement. And then there was this series of events of forgiveness, of pardon, of really an expression of love
yes.
that enabled not only the revolution not to take place, but a transformation. Was the most democratic elections probably in the whole history of Africa in 1994, a new government which recognized, in fact, taking some of our recommendations, the human rights of all, and then even beyond that, this extraordinary creation that is a court, Truth and Reconciliation courts all over South Africa, that was based on essentially this religious principle of forgiveness. There was a court which gave the legal ability to pardon individuals who had committed horrible crimes on both sides, the ANC, the African National Congress, as
right.
well as the apartheid government, to pardon individuals who'd committed these crimes if they were willing to genuinely demand or request forgiveness of the victims or the families of the victims, and the families agreed to that forgiveness.
Yeah, that's huge. John, I just got a note from our mutual friend Frederica, because you've mentioned the Novato Church, and again, people can hear the full text of John's lecture there, marinchristianscience.com, but the Novato Church has offered 10 copies of Science and Health with Keys to the Scriptures for the first 10 callers that we get, or the first 10 that we get. You can either call or you can email me, scout@lifeinsights.net, or call into the station, 415-543-8255, and Kwong will get your name and address. Or if you email me your name and address so that we can give those out. It's a beautiful gift from the Novato Church of Christian Science. Copies of Mary Baker Eddy's Science and Health with Keys to the Scripture. Sorry to interrupt the flow there, John, but I just got that note coming in here. So it's a deep and profound thing, the whole notion of, if I'm trying to see if I'm gathering the overview of shifting my perspective to recognize, the reality inside the individual, and rather than go into opposition with them, seek that place where I can interact with the part of them that really is real from the part of me that really is real, beyond the evidence of my senses or even beyond the standard traditional emotional knee-jerk responses.
I would say you've captured it. Yes, that's it, Scott. And that last comment that you made is kind of crucial, because one of the things that stands in the way of enabling us to do this is our tendency to react.
Yeah.
Now we sense something. We know, of course, that it's wrong and maybe totally unjust. And bingo, we're in a mental state of not just judgment but condemnation. And from that point, it's down. You know, unless we break out of that. So either we've got to protect ourselves from falling into that stereotype. Mm-hmm. And that's already a challenge, but sometimes we can do that. Or we can recognize, hey, I'm not going to be, you know, carried forward with this this kind of... And I mean, I think given the state of politics in the United States today, this is a lesson that we all need to learn, not to, mm-hmm. you know, not to react, not to make those snap judgments. But then what you put your finger on, I think, is just crucial. It's using, again, not the physical senses, not our judgments about the history of where the person came from, but an ability that we all have to sense the godlike nature. Well, let's call it just the spiritual goodness of mm-hmm. of another individual, of these of the real identity of others, and recognizing that consciousness, that kind of aligning of our thought with laws that are governing our relationship, is going to enable us to speak with, or if we're not in immediate contact with that individual, think about in a way which is going to help both us and the individual and the whole situation.
So, John, I'm really hearing you, and I want to bring this out to make sure everybody's hearing it. You're talking about being able to perhaps be making a change inside myself, but with a reality that change affects not just where my fingers, voice, words, thoughts go, but actually makes an effect broader than that as it joins together with others and make a change across the world.
Exactly. That's and underlying this is a consciousness, again, going back to that idea, you know, where Jesus talks about the world, and what he's referring to is the material world and that which we're conscious of through our physical senses. But underlying this is an awareness that world actually is not the governing. That's the superficial. And that we can uh-huh. become conscious of underlying spiritual laws that are essentially good. I mean, this may sound, you know, Pollyannish, utopistic, whatever, but it's really true. And again, for me, that experience in South Africa is just such a shining example, and there's so many others that could be cited, of our consciousness of this underlying law of good. And it's God's government. John talks about God as love. It's this operation of divine love at the fundamental level. And as we bring into consciousness a recognition that's actually governing me and others, it's an enormous challenge, but we can get there. We can begin to understand the nature of the operation of that law, And then, you know, there's just any number of ways in which good is going to could be the consequence of our single individual understanding of the operation of that law.
Wow, perfect. This is Spiritual Perspectives. We're talking with John Tyler. You can actually find, go look him up on the net. You can find more T-Y-L-E-R and then C-S-B after his name. But John's,
put an M in the middle.
John M. Tyler makes you much easier to find. Perfect. Perfect.
Right.
And John does talks around the world designed to show how natural it is to change our vision of ourselves so that we all can become spiritual healers, and not just a healer of my finger, my wrist, my elbow, my ankle, but expanding that healing into understanding and working within God's government of the universe rather than man's attempts to construct a government. John, this has been an absolute privilege. I have thoroughly enjoyed our chance to talk today, and the time has just gone far too quickly. I appreciate you coming by to talk with us this morning.
It's been wonderful, Scott, and I appreciate your appreciation, because we're together, I think, in the recognition of the value of this real prayer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so very much. And I want to remind everybody that we show up every fifth Friday when there is one in the month, but we also show up in between. You're listening on our keynote station, KEST, but you can also hear us on KESTradio.com all the way around the world. This is Scout Bartlett and Spiritual Perspectives reminding you to treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are, and that no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day for you to have a great day on purpose.